again, and thank you for downloading our latest podcast from Standard Issue magazine. In this episode, we join Standard Issue founder Sarah Millican on stage and in conversation at Stand 3 during 2016's Edinburgh Fringe Festival, with special guests actor and comedian Katie Brand, stand-up comic Kiri Pritchard-McLean, and Standard Issue editor Mickey Noonan. As always, all of our podcasts are available on iTunes and directly from standardissuemagazine.com/podcasts. Thank you again, and enjoy the show!
The rest of you. Thanks very much for coming to Standard Issue in Conversation. Should I introduce myself? I am Sarah Millican.
Hello. The fuck are you?
That's what people ask a lot. I am Sarah Millican. I am a comedian and a writer and the parent of some fairy children. And they're pets, sorry.
I should have clarified.
Fairy children.
I thought you said fairy children.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
Having some sort of nervous breakdown.
They live at the bottom of the garden. And I thank you so much. I set up the magazine Standard Issue, so that is me. This is Katie.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I'm Katie Brand, and I am a supporter of Standard Issue and hope to be an occasional writer in the autumn.
Yes, please. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, that's it. That's how I get jobs. I just fight my way on stage and announce that I'm doing it.
She's not even supposed to be here. It's really awkward.
I'm Kiri Pritchard-McLean. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I write for Standard Issue.
Hello.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
I'm Mickey Noonan. I'm the editor of Standard Issue, and I don't know how to use microphones properly, which is why I have to have a stand.
Yeah, you do. You just sit it. And we can't hear you, and we want to be able to hear you because you're awesome. How should we start? Should I tell people a bit about the magazine?
Give us a cheer if you've heard of Standard Issue. Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one, yeah.
We usually ask.
I guess cheer if you haven't. Okay, we've got to convert you fuckers. So Standard Issue is, and for those who don't know, and for those who do know, just, you know, make yourselves comfortable for a minute. Standard Issue is an online magazine for women by women. Everybody who works on it and writes for it and illustrates it, is of the female persuasion. I set up Standard Issue 2 years ago. I'm going to keep looking to Mickey for a correlation. Yeah, Two years ago. 2 years ago for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I didn't feel like there was anything for me when I looked at the magazine racks at the train station. I do a lot of travelling in my job, and I would have a look on the racks, and if I wasn't into like cross stitch or slagging off women, wasn't an awful lot left for me. And I'm not into either of those things, but you know, I might do cross stitch at some point. So I felt like there was nothing for me, and there wasn't any. I don't always want to read a newspaper. I don't always want to read a book. I wanted something that had things that were of interest to me but weren't necessarily negative, which is what I felt like a lot of magazines for women are. So that was one reason. Also, I wanted a safe place for women to be able to read things. So one of the things that we have always had from the start is no comments. We don't have any comments at all on the articles. So if you read an article underneath, you can recommend it. Which means it then goes into another panel where you'll say, like, the top reads of the week. But you can't go on and say, fucking hell, women are all assholes. Which is what people generally do when anybody has written anything on the internet about women, by women, or for women.
We want our trolls to make an effort. You actually have to, like, log in, set up an email address, and just get bored.
Yeah, and then you have to email us, and then we can just ignore it.
Yeah.
That's the best way to be. So that was kind of why I set up the magazine. We've been going for 2 years now, and we do occasional events like this, which for me is selfishly just a chance to be able to be on a stage with other women, which is something that I like to do. Have I covered things? Is that...
That was pretty comprehensive.
Thanks. Have you got anything to add, Mickey Noonan?
No.
I bullied her into being the editor. I should say that. That's not very feminist, is it?
I remember it differently. I remember biting your arm off.
Well, I did, yeah. I gave you tapas, and that's never enough, is it? So she had to have my arm as well. I forced her into mocktails and tapas.
I lulled her into,
we'll just have a lunch. We'll just have a, then please help me, I don't know what to do. I'd like to set up a magazine, but I've got no fucking clue how to do it. And then lo and behold, we have it and it exists, and we're very pleased with the results. Do you want to ask a question, Mickey Noonan?
Shall I ask a question, Sarah Millican?
I don't know why we're doing full names, but we're doing full names. Yes.
It's like a Jane Austen novel. Quite appropriate.
Katie Brand. Thank you very much, Katie Brand.
Not at all, Sarah Millican. It's my pleasure.
Sarah Millican.
Oh, okay.
I would like you to tell me two things that you like about yourself. One, I want you to be as cocky as fuck. And two, one personality, one physical.
Personality, I can do. So I like that. That sounds terrible. I'm very fond of my personality. I genuinely think that I'm awesome. I really do. And when people say, oh, you're awesome, it's really hard to go, I know. No, it's hard not to do that. No, I have to go, really? Thanks so much. Oh, my God, this thing, it's £5. So I think, personality-wise, I like that I'm a hard worker, I think. I am a grafter. It's something that my dad instilled in us when we were kids. Like, it was the worst thing you could possibly be was lazy. And we would bump into somebody that he used to work at the pit with in the street just when we were shopping. And my dad would be really nice and civil to them. And then they walked away and he would go, oh, lazy, absolutely lazy, lazy twat. So I always knew that lazy was a bad thing. So I think I always wanted to just please my dad. So I became a hard worker. So I think hard worker. Physical is harder. Oh, God, I'm working on it. It's a work in progress. But mostly, oh, no. I like having longer hair because... I can put it up when I get sweaty. It's down now, so I'm really sweaty, everyone. I smelt my bra, though, and it's still okay for another day. I think bras in Edinburgh last less time, don't they, during the fringe.
Smell.
Yeah, the meaty smell. Yeah, the kind of where you nudge your boob and it's like somebody started a barbecue like that. So... I like my hair at the moment.
It looks very lustrous.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah, it's like you wash it in egg or something. Those kind of tips that other magazines, not Standard Issue, do to make you feel shit. Those bullshit tips you get given that you go around with scrambled egg in your hair.
Scrambled. Then I could have a little nibble if I was hungry. I quite like that if it tasted
and then your meaty tits and eggy hair. It's delicious.
Oh my God, you're a full English breakfast.
Did you have a sausage? The idea that I'm a full English breakfast. That's my thing that I like about me physically is that I smell a bit like a full English breakfast.
You're welcome, everyone. Katie Brand.
Which one is the first one?
Whichever you like.
I think about me, my personality. I'm quite persistent. I'm quite persistent and bloody minded, which I quite like. I can be quite persistent in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary. For example, I once wrote to Jim or Fix It to ask to meet Michael Jackson.
You're just doubling your chances.
Yeah. I feel like I dodged a bullet, though. It never happened. I don't know, but part of me feels like I'd do it again.
Do you think your producer saw your letter and just went, no, we can't do that. That's illegal in
all so many ways. Yeah, we need to put that on the later pile. I'm quite persistent and bloody-minded personality. Physically, I don't know. I quite like my face.
You do have that a nice
cocky
face.
I mean, what I mean is, it's not like the individual component parts I think are particularly amazing, or that I'm especially sort of extraordinary looking. I just think, I just think it's quite a sort of, just generally quite a sort of medium level nice face.
No,
but I think the combination of things is just kind of quite nice together.
Yeah.
Do you agree? Thanks. I'm going to do this every night for the whole night.
I think you're allowed to be cockier than that.
I think
it feels like you were pulling back.
Yeah, you
back
went for
there.
Medium level nice
yeah.
face.
Yeah,
so it's not cocky, is
what's
it?
What's clear is that I'm pulling back from saying I believe myself to be extraordinarily beautiful. Like a creature like no other.
Yeah, I've described myself as a creature like no other, but I didn't mean it in a good way. I think that's lovely.
Thanks, Sarah Millican.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie Brand.
I got cracking tits.
Oh, applause for over there on the tits.
Yeah, but only two.
One each.
Yeah, one each. Or two for the bigger one.
Left.
No, right.
Oh, it's traditionally left.
Is it?
Apparently.
Oh, God, that probably means something
traditionally,
awful.
Traditionally, like some sort of...
Yeah, it's handed down. There's a Morris dance about it, isn't there? Yeah.
I don't know if you... Maybe my right one's more muscular because I'm right-handed. Have you got any doctors in? Does that sound even remotely fucking feasible?
This event is already very different to what I was told. I'm severely regretting it. Is anyone else? I retract my offer to write for Standard Issue.
It's been recorded. It's
done now.
And then this is a bad one, but I like my confidence to the point of arrogance, because I think being a stand-up and things, you have to be relentlessly confident. I talk about this in my show, but you know, when you go for a job interview and they go, what are your weaknesses? And you have to do the fake humble thing. Well, I couldn't think of anything. So yeah.
Is that your weakness then?
No, I panicked and said ankles. not what they're after. And they're fucking brilliant as well, so yeah.
No. It goes all the way along. She doesn't like answering questions. Tell me, what do you like about your personality and your physical appearance, please?
Personality-wise, I like that as I've got older, I'm getting much better at saying no when I don't want to do something. I think I used to be a people pleaser, and I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to go, but I'm going to have to go. And now I just go, no.
No is really powerful, but also I was okay at saying no, but I used to always give excuses. So I say no and then give reasons. And I realise now you don't have to give reasons. You can just say, I say no can do. Oh, sorry, no can do. And people go, oh, okay. And then I got out of it. Whatever it fucking was, I got out of it.
You can take it a little bit farther, because I asked someone to do a favour for me recently, and she's a very confident older woman, very glamorous and very quite deservedly self-possessed. But I asked her to do me a favour, and she sent me a message saying, no, I'm not going to do this because I don't want to. Okay?
I didn't like that.
That's brilliant. Great.
Deborah Frances White said to me, she said, if someone asks you, do you want to go to a wedding in 6 months' time, if at that point in time you don't want to go, you're not going to want to go in 6 months' time. So you just go, no, have a lovely day.
I've got a rule about weddings. I only go to a wedding if I think it's going to last. Is that really bad?
Oh, it is, because I am terrified now to send you the invite to my wedding. Fuck, she says. Because if you don't reply, I'd be like, it's off, babe, sorry.
I'm not some kind of predictor of the future.
how do you tell? How do you know if it's going to last? What are
you know, do you?
You
yeah.
know.
You know.
Where the fuck have you been with my relationships? You guys going, no. Yeah. And physically, I've got a really nice smile.
Oh, yeah. It's lovely. That's nice. Good.
Kiri, what did you want to be when you were a kid?
I mean, you'll see where the arrogance started here. I remember having a very clear idea when I was, I think, about 4 or 5 years old, that me and a boy in my class, Samira Sabai, we would go around the world in a helicopter saving all the animals.
In a helicopter?
In a
How
helicopter.
Many would you get in the helicopter?
You'd have them dangling out in a chain, I reckon, or in a big net underneath it. I'm an ideas man, Sarah, please. Samira was logistics. So that was it. I was convinced that was a legit career plan for me. That's what
this is actually
do.
A fundraising event to make the money to get Kiri a helicopter. Hashtag Kiri's helicopter.
And my really big net.
Katie, what about you?
I can't really remember some very, very specific things. I always wanted to do something that involved showing off. Although, funnily enough, that's got less so as I've got older. I went through a phase of wanting to be a prison chaplain. I don't know why, it's a slightly odd thing for a sort of 11-year-old to want to be. But yeah, I quite like the idea of going into prisons and talking about Jesus to convicts. I don't know, I know, I've basically killed the room. But that is what I wanted to be, only for briefly, very briefly.
Right, okay.
I like the idea of being a detective, and I remember when I was about sort of 7, I used to get up and look out the window on our street, and I'd write down all the number plates in a notebook on the street, because I thought, you know, if I then see on the news that a car has been stolen or there's been some crime, then I will have just recorded all the number plates just in case on our street. Does this sound controlling at all? I don't know.
To me, it's more noteworthy and newsworthy that 11-year-old is writing down all the number plates on her street.
Yeah, you see, I used to do not. It's a little bit similar. I used to, if I saw somebody dodgy, like somebody just not doing what I thought they, or just standing for too long somewhere, not like at a bus stop. I'm not an idiot, but like I understand how buses work. But somebody just standing for a bit too long, something I didn't quite understand, I used to make a note and write their description down of what they were wearing and stuff. I think I was just a grass in the making.
I prefer the term civic minded.
Okay.
Sarah, what about you? What did you want to be when you were little?
When I was little, I just wanted to be liked when I was little. So that's true. And I did all sorts of things to do that. I suppose I did my homework on time. I didn't realise that doesn't get you liked. Well, it does, just by teachers. But it's all right, they'll still come to your birthday if you ask them. I totally did. My maths teacher came once, but one of my friends bit her husband and she wasn't allowed to come back again. That's a different story for a different time. But career-wise, I really wanted to be a stripper for a short while. Because I thought it was just like nice ladies dancing. I was quite innocent. And I remember when I was about 16 or 17, my dad had said like, "Oh, we were so glad when you grew boobs." Which is a weird thing for your dad to say. And I asked why, and he said, "Well, you always wanted to be a stripper." Okay. Thanks. And then I obviously found out what that was and wasn't that good at dancing, to be fair. But I also wanted to be a vet for quite a long time because I thought it was just cuddling rabbits. I did a work experience at a veterinary hospital. It's not just cuddling rabbits. It's sort of cutting things open. I walked in at one point. I was doing 5 days there, and I walked in at one point, and they had a bucket on the floor to collect like the fluid, and they were doing an operation on a dog. And I walked in and just turned round and walked back out again because I thought, I can't go in there, I'm just going to be sick. And then I popped my head in and I said, "Anybody want a cup of tea?" So I could have run a calf by the end of that. I was so good at tea and fucking dishes. But yeah, I didn't. And then, yeah, I think it was mostly just stripping in vets. Is there something I could do that would cover both of those things? Stripping for animals.
There's got to be a Channel 4 reality show. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I'll pitch it. I'll let you know.
Didn't you want to be a film reviewer for a while as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I wanted to be... Well, I was a film reviewer for a while. For the free paper, you know, the one that people put down for their cats to piss on. That one. I was a reviewer for 4.5 years for the free paper. I had my own column.
What era in terms of film?
Late 90s, I guess. Mid to late 90s.
Titanic? Is
yeah.
that one of yours?
Yeah, and I worked in a cinema at the time, so I was sick to death of that song. But I just did it for expenses, and I had a lovely time. But then, you know, when you go through all paperwork, and you think, what's this? And it was a letter from the producer of film 92 or 95 or whatever it was at the time. And it was a letter from the producer saying, "We're not ready to sack or fire Barry Norman just yet." So I can only imagine that the letter I sent to him was... "Can I have a go?" I also, incidentally, this is really awful, I have a letter from a member of Philip Schofield's family. I don't know which member, but they've got the same surname, which basically says, "No, I don't know why he hasn't got a calendar either." Which leads to me to believe that I've sent a letter to a member of Philip Schofield's family asking why he hasn't got a calendar. Anyway, I think we've all heard enough from me. Forever.
Did you have like extensive blackouts in which you just furiously wrote letters to public figures?
I think I might have done it. I didn't want to meet Michael Jackson though.
Yeah. I wrote him long letters.
I did write to Jim will fix it, and I asked to be a veterinary nurse for a day. I think I just took it like a work experience rather than other people wanted to be princesses for a day, and I was thinking like, well, what could my career be based on? But I didn't get it.
When you were little, did you have decent feminist role models? Was the women in your life that you could look up to and encourage you to be whatever you wanted to be? Let's start with you, Katie.
Well, I always think it's quite interesting as a girl to have grown up in the 80s because like them or loathe them, it was quite an interesting time because Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister, we had the Queen of England, and Madonna was the top of the charts. So I felt like women had it covered, really. I think when I was very young, it was only when I got into the 90s, in my teens, where all of that kind of went to the wayside and things felt like they sort of, all those people had got a bit less visible. So I feel like, in a way, that there were these kind of quite public role models, even though, you know, if not supporting Margaret Thatcher or whatever you think of the royal family or even Madonna, to be honest, I think they were still there. They were at the top of their particular things.
Do you think if the Queen was here in the audience today, or if she listened to the podcast, she'd be so smug about those three that you've just listed? Because one's not top of the charts so much, yeah. One's dead, and she's still fucking there.
Yeah, she's made of lead. Even her own mother. I know, she'll last forever. Yeah, I think the Queen actually has quite a lot to feel smug about. I think she's all right. Mm-hmm. Well, I like the Queen personally. I think quite a lot of people like the Queen. But I think she's quite a good role model generally to have. I don't know where I'm going with this. If you had asked me earlier, what am I going to talk about tonight? I wouldn't have said this.
I'm just going to monologue about the Queen for a bit, I reckon.
What am I talking about?
Just going to riff on the Queen.
I'm a bit overtired. No, but I just think those three people to be in the press, on the news every day, is quite instructive for young girls.
Yeah, I agree. Kiri?
My mum, that feels a bit lame to say that, but my mum was very, just always worked a million jobs and has always worked for longer and harder than my dad. So that was, to me, it was always that, like, well, like, you work hard and there's no such thing as women's work because I grew up on a farm. So she was great. Also, my nine, which is my father's mother, I remember her being in like her 90s, and it was during a heat wave, and they went down on our lane on the farm and they were pulling up like ragwort, which is really horrible, horrible, relentless job. And my other grandma went, oh, this isn't women's work, and went back to the house. But she was just there, and she was in her 90s, and she did it all day. So, like, physical work as well, that didn't feel out of bounds to me. And then it's weird for me, popular culture, because, I mean, I was raised on the Spice Girls. And that's feminism in a push-up bra with a fake ID, isn't it? But I suppose there was a little thing there about seeing some girls who were just, like, I guess I didn't realise that they were trying to rebrand feminism with the whole girl power. I just saw like five girls having a fucking laugh doing whatever they wanted. Yeah. And I was like, well, yeah, that sounds great. And I really like leopard print, so let's do that. So I think, I guess, being 11 and seeing the Spice Girls was a really exciting thing at the time. And I know everyone's a bit divided on what they were now, but I guess having that at home, feeling like you could do anything, and then seeing exciting, dynamic women in the public eye was.
You could sort of tell the Spice Girls was a bit different, because I remember all the boys at my school, I was 18 when the Spice Girls sort of were at their major peak, and it was like all the boys fancied Atomic Kitten and were frightened of the Spice Girls. And that was quite sort of instructive, I think, somehow. You sort of, even if you didn't quite understand what was going on, it was quite an interesting sort of difference.
Mm. I think mine's probably... You said it was quite lame to see your mum. I don't think it is at all. I think it's wonderful. I think mine is my mum. My mum has never taken any bullshit, and I think that's quite important when you grow up to know that you can basically do anything. My mum refused. So when did they get married? They've been married 50 years, so that's a long time ago, obviously. And when they got married, they got a joint bank account, and my mum refused to be Mr. and Mrs. initials, you know, my dad's initials. And so and apparently that was the first time that bank had anybody complain, which is pretty awesome. And she got her, so it was Mr. initials, Mrs. initials, and then the surname. And she just said, well, that's not my name. My name is not a man's name. So, and I quite like that about her, that she in just a small way, she just still wanted to be identified. Even on her checkbook, she still wanted to be visible. So she was always quite ballsy. And the same as the girls are saying, I think just anybody who's sort of around, especially musically when you're that kind of age, more important than maybe actors and things like that, I guess. And also, just I was kind of brought up in a household that always sort of said there was no such thing as can't. That was our rule. There was no such thing as can't. My dad always said, the only thing you can't do is stick your bum out of your bedroom window and run downstairs and throw stones at it. And that was the only thing you can't do. Everything else... Which it was quite a funny way, but it was quite a good message as well.
So how many days
else...
did you lose to that? Trying that?
Well, you have to just grow your arse to a certain size and have a small garden and preferably a flat. So everything else was always... and I guess that was just the way we were brought up. So I guess that's kind of feminist, even though it's coming from my dad. Just the idea that you can just do anything.
I just remembered about another one, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, can't wait to get that call telling me I'm going to save the world.
With your helicopter.
With my helicopter and my arrogance.
My mum's a weird one. She's probably my biggest feminist role model as well. And she's amazing and she brought me up on her own. And she worked loads of jobs as well and did anything to keep the house afloat. And so she's this perfect feminist role model until she starts talking. And then it all goes wrong. So we were on the phone the other day and she'd not been in touch with my brother for ages. I said, you should really drop Aaron a text. And she went, I just get bored that he doesn't get back to me. And I'm like, if I didn't respond, you wouldn't just stop texting me. And she went, but you're a girl. Boys can look after themselves.
Boo!
And also they can't. For years.
But I told my friend this story and I was kind of having a bit of a whinge about it. And she went, oh, I've got you beaten. And I was like, oh, I didn't know this was a competition. And she said, oh yeah, my mum once said to me, it's always worse for a mother when a son dies. Oh my God! She was welcome to that prize. I didn't want it.
Crikey.
That is horrific.
My friend has a little boy and he's 6 now. And she's sort of thinking about having another child. And her mum was like, she said, you don't need to, because she said, you know what, the first one anyway is always the special one. And she sent that to my friend, who is the third child.
Thanks, Mum. Sarah Millican.
Hello.
If you could go back in time and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give her?
How young? Like a fortnight ago or like 2? How young?
Like 12, 13.
12 or 13. Oh, she wasn't a happy babe. But, you know, a maths teacher still came to my birthday party. He had a smashing time. I think I would tell my 12-year-old self that the rules at school don't apply in the real world, maybe. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're 12 and I was unpopular, because I was kind of bookish and nerdy and didn't have boobs yet. And, I mean, didn't get them till I left school. I mean, they weren't like a prize or anything. They just...
You did well on your GCSEs.
I didn't have many friends. I was quite quiet and quite, like I say, quite sort of nerdy and probably a bit weird, probably. I think most people who seek to perform for a living are a little bit odd. It's not a normal thing to want to do. But then I think if future me was able to, wouldn't have been an email, send a letter to... tiny me, and just to let me know that actually all the things that make you different and weird at school are the things that make you different and also kind of awesome in the real world. And I think that it would be nice if somebody had come up to my face and just said, hey kid, different is good and don't worry because you'll be, you know, an interesting and original adult as opposed to a tiny, scared, nerdy, weird kid. And I think that would have been nice to have been told that, I guess. So I guess I know that now, because I know that all of the girls and boys that kind of blended in and were all popular and everybody knew them and liked them are all like shit now and just and really, they're all boring. And when they get in touch, I ignore them. Just mostly really fun. Although I'll have a little look on Facebook, obviously. And then, you know, sort of, oh, never mind. They all had a rah-rah skirt at the same time, and I wasn't allowed one. I don't know why. And then I got a rah-rah skirt. Do you remember rah-rah skirts? Yeah, okay. And then I got a rah-rah skirt much later on, and so I was out of fashion, but then stood out. And at school, that was like, you know, bullying time, get followed home by somebody telling you that they think you look like shit. But as an adult, it's much better to just kind of have style and not be the same as everybody else and blend in and be a sheep, I guess, maybe. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, thanks.
Oh, so a friend of mine had a theory that people peak at different times in life, and he always said he felt quite sorry for people. I mean, obviously played into both of our combined narratives of certainly not having peaked at school, but he did once say it was quite interesting about people who peak at school, who peak when they're 15 or 16, and how he actually, even though it was horrible at the time, if you're not peaking at that time, people who have really got their shit together when they're 15 or 16, it's difficult for them to sustain that into life, and actually things can be a bit difficult after that. I think Victoria Wood said something quite similar, actually, that when she was asked something similar about what advice would she give herself when she was at school, and just sort of saying, you know, don't worry about the people who seem to have got their shit down in terms of being at school and being 15. You know, they look good in a uniform, they've got a boyfriend, they just seem to be on top of everything, because that won't necessarily continue into the rest of their lives.
Yay.
Yeah. There was nothing funny about that.
No, just, no.
It's also like legit creepy if they're wearing a school uniform for the rest of their life.
Yeah, don't do that. So. Don't do that.
Unless, of course, you're a stripper. Or crankies, yeah.
Stripper and crankies, everything else not allowed.
What about you, Kiri? What would you say to younger Kiri?
I think I used to be very aggressive. I mean, physically. And I think I would probably say, just chill out. You don't have to fight everyone about everything. Because I had this weird thing that when we had the farm, my mum would go out and she'd work night shifts to pay for me to go to a private school, because the schools close weren't very good. So I was in this like very cocooned private school, and then I went into the big state school, which was my choice. I nearly went to another private school. And then just that was such a huge culture shock. And I went from being like Billy Big Balls to who gives a shit. And the transition wasn't very easy for me. And then I just felt like I always had to be on the defensive for a few years, that I would always take. Also, my dad, terrible advice, was like when I was like, Dad, I think I might be being bullied. And he's like, just hit the biggest one, was his advice. And in fact, he told me, one of his advice he gave me is like, he was like, right, what you want to do is, you don't punch someone, you don't slap someone. What you want to do is you want to backhand them, because it stings like a slap, it aches like a punch, and it doesn't leave a mark. And I was like, this was like on my way to a year 8 disco as he bundled me out the door.
So I was like the Welsh Muhammad Ali.
That's not some horrible omen, is it, for this year? God. So that was, I was sort of taught that almost to go out fighting. And probably now I should have mellowed the fuck out. Because I think I was a bit too pugnacious. And now I think I was probably an aggressor. I didn't see it at the time. I thought everyone was having a go at me, but I should have just chilled out and been a bit more. It's hard to say to a 12-year-old, just relax, be more secure in yourself. I know you don't know what that is, and you're still wearing a crop top, but just relax. But yeah, I think I would have been like, you don't need to fight everyone, it's exhausting, you've got better stuff to do, I think.
That's cool.
Mickey?
I'd probably just tell her it's all going to be okay.
Aw.
Because, yeah, I struggled, I got bullied, and I was like the little fat kid at school, and now I'm better looking than them, so fuck them.
Thank God for Facebook. What would we do without Facebook?
Yeah.
How would we ever know what they look like now? They've got.
You are three very funny women, so I would like to know what makes you, what never fails to make you piss yourself laughing. Let's start with Katie this time.
Dog on a skateboard.
Fucking brilliant.
Love it.
Is it? Does it have to be doing the leg as well?
No.
It can be gliding,
it can be falling off, it can be giving it its best shot, not quite managing. I don't mind. I just like the whole sort of scenario of the dog on the skateboard. Dog on any kind of sporting equipment. Dog on a trampoline. I'm just being honest here.
Treadmill,
I love a dog on a treadmill. That's great. Dogs doing incongruous things. Sorry, it's not very sophisticated. But, you know, that have I opened the book a bit too much? And Stuart Lee.
That balances out.
Yeah.
Kerry, don't you have a weird thing about dogs?
No, not like that. It's not going to get really weird. I love a dog in a wheelchair. Like, I know it sounds awful, like, but if you ever watch YouTube... Have you not seen
them? No, I've not looked.
It's the single most uplifting thing you will ever see is dogs where they've had things amputated. And then, yeah, you'd think so, like, no. But then they make them little wheelchairs and dogs are like, well, I'll just crack on regardless.
Do you mean when they bolt the wheels onto
the
hips?
And they're just like,
hips,
yeah.
Oh, I thought
God,
you meant just
so...
a dog sitting in somebody's wheelchair.
No, I don't mean like a dog that's usurped and gone, that's his seat, actually. So he's got his blanket on, he's confused.
No, I thought you were like dogs doing cosplay as
actual little dogs with little wheels attached.
And that makes you, that so just, cute. Oh, it doesn't make you laugh. That's not the thing that makes
no,
you
no,
laugh.
No,
oh,
no, I just,
no.
Okay. I'm really like, ah, isn't it awful when beautiful things are less fortunate than you? No, it's not that arrogant. No, I've got a big soft spot for a dog in a wheelchair. Big soft spot.
But what makes you laugh?
Dogs in wheelchairs when there's steps. No. I feel like this is a lame thing, but like my friends and predominantly my girlfriends make me laugh so much, so much. Like really, just hoot. Deb's my friend, the one whose mum said she was not a favourite. She always says the thing where she's like, oh, that you'd like him because he's on our wavelength, or you'd like her because... And it's a wavelength thing. You know when you find someone and you could have just met them and the rest of them are all your long friends and they just get it. And, I love that. I love being chewed into someone's sense of humour really quickly. So friends for me is that... Because I don't like... I mean, when you work in comedy, like watching on telly doesn't usually really do it for me, but it has to be that social thing of being with friends, I think. So
that's not lame at all. That's awesome.
I feel like I'm just wearing the most, like, fucking Hallmark card answers to things. Like, I would have to say my friends, but mainly female friendship. Fuck off, mate.
Sarah?
I think my female friends as well, but since she's still...
Lame.
Yeah, just copying. And also, like, my husband and I have... It's such ridiculous, and sometimes we laugh so hard that we weigh ourselves, and I don't think anybody else would find it funny, you know, when something just tickles both of you. And sometimes it's when we're really tired, and that's when we know that ridiculous, like that's how we know we're tired, because we're laughing at something completely fucking stupid. And that's when I go, are you tired? And he goes, yes. And that's how we know. I think he makes me laugh every day. And I think maybe if I saw my female friends every day, they would do the same, but I'm not that lucky. I wish I did see my friends every day. But I'd have to say my husband, and I think I would hope that I make him laugh the same. Let's put that on the podcast and see what he says when he listens to it. I'm not needy, shut the fuck up. Mickey?
I like really silly things, sort of slapstick stuff, and also an inventive profanity. Like, if you get, like, a sort of half swear word and an animal, like shit weasel. Fucking
yeah,
brilliant.
That's good, yeah.
Fanny badger. Flange panther.
Is that a good thing, a fanny badger?
It doesn't matter. Whatever you want.
Oh, okay.
I'd go out with him. I'd have a go on a fanny badger.
I don't think Sarah's going to be at the wedding.
I've been out with him.
If anyone's disgusted, I share your feelings.
Oh, tell it to the prisoners.
And on the flip side, what never fails to make you really angry? I'm going to start with Kiri.
Ooh, how long have we got?
Is it able-bodied dogs?
Look at him with all his working limbs.
Also, big fan of dog animals with jobs, but anyway, that's another thing. Oh, especially if he's got a uniform. Anyway.
Like dogs that work in Nando.
That's very cruel, Katie. what makes me angry? I've got this huge thing I have had since I was a young person. Again, one of the things that I would probably get aggressive about is because I'm quite a confident loudmouth. People therefore assume, you know, that empty vessels make most noise. I think people frequently assumed that I was stupid, and that boils my piss. Really makes me cross if people think that I'm stupid or to be sort of talked down to or patronised. But to the point that I'm go the other way, and I'm sort of paranoid about looking stupid. And it was you who said something to me. I think we were chatting about something. Someone was chatting, and you went, "Oh, what does that word mean?" And I have never heard anyone do that before, because I would always be like, mentally remember that word and then go away and look it up and say that you need a wee and then come back and use it again so they know you understand. And I just, like, with the confidence of someone to just go, "Oh, I don't know what that means," and then know it, and then just be like, that felt like the bravest thing to me, because it was like I would be so scared that if I didn't know that word, everyone would think that I was stupid. And and you don't mind people. No, that's not what this is about. No, but I was like, gosh, I would perceive that as being vulnerable. And as soon as you did it, I was like, that's the least vulnerable thing I've seen someone do.
I quite like being vulnerable. I don't think there's anything wrong with being. But I like to ask the question, firstly, because I want to find out what the word means. Secondly, because I'm not bothered if people think that I'm stupid, because I know that I'm not. And thirdly, because often they don't know what it means either.
And you catch them on the hop, and it's very entertaining from this side.
Yes, I think that's people. Yeah, assuming that I'm not bright really makes me. But it's probably like as I get more secure, that'll drift away. But at the moment, anything that like that, where people assume I'm thick, is a big problem for me. It makes me spiky.
You've all been warned. Katie,
I don't like it when people get off the train and then just stop walking. Makes me so furious. I can't just look at the move and then look at the map. I really hate it when people I don't like it when people act like they can do something and then later on you discover they can't do it, and they sort of act like they were never going to do that in the first place. On a serious note, that makes me absolutely livid.
I sort of need an example.
I feel like something's happened today, don't you? The fact that she said that.
This happens to me every day. No, just, you know, when people kind of act like they're going to sort something out for you, or they're kind of a bit cocky and flashy with it. Even, you know, it sort of is minor things like waiters that don't write things down and then get...
Oh, don't fuck with my food. Oh, fuck me.
You know, just write it down. Just be humble enough to write it down and then get the order right. There's no shame. Some of the best waiters in the best restaurants in the world write the order down.
Because they're the best waiters. Yeah. I don't like when there's too much personality, not enough accuracy in a waiter.
Yes.
When there's too much chatty, chatty, chat, chat, and then they bring the wrong fucking dinner and I'm not happy. Because yeah. You're going to have to make the right one.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you on that.
No, totally, I don't like that. And then sort of all the way up to sort of even professional things. You know, in this business, it's always very precarious and, you know, things sound great and people offer you things. And the weirdest thing about this business is that people phone you up unsolicited. They phone up your agent and they say, "We've got this amazing job. If we were to ask Katie to do the job, would she say yes?" And then your agent phones you and goes, "This is an amazing job. You know, it's going to be a lovely job. It's just the sort of thing you want to do. It's not going to take up too much of your time. It's going to be a lot of money. I think you're going to really enjoy it." They want to know, if they ask you to do the job, will you do the job? So you go, yeah, I'd love to do the job. Tell them I'd love to do it. And then your agent goes back and says, "Katie would love to do the job." And they go, "Oh, great, thanks." And then you never hear from them again. Wow. It's like kind of being offered jobs that you haven't applied for and then being told you can't have them. It's just sort of weird. There's a lot of broken promises in this business. There's a lot of great stuff as well, but there's things, and just sort of, I guess, in the business, in everything, people not sticking to their word just drives me nuts, because I don't like to say I'm going to do something and then not do it.
Isn't that called, I think that's called an expression of interest, isn't it? So if you say, "Oh, I quite like the sound of that," and then they come back and then they've got a list of all the people that are interested in doing it,
can pick the ones that suit them, exactly.
But you could say, "I'm expressing an interest in you sticking to your fucking word." No, do that.
No, it can just be a little bit frustrating. But I think it's across the board. I think it happens in all businesses, really. I just like it when people don't say they're going to do something if they can't fulfil it.
I think that's fair enough.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Sarah Millicom, what makes you angry?
Not very many things. Probably more things should make me angry. I sort of agree with most of the things these guys have said, and I realise that I'm more angry than I thought I was. I think my husband is... The only thing he gets angry at is when diversion signs peter out.
Oh!
And then I didn't drive when he told me that, and then I've been driving sort of 7-8 years now, and I realise that's one of the things that makes me angry as well. When it says follow the diamond, and I follow the diamond, and then the diamond fucking disappears, and then I'm lost, and I don't know where to go, and there are no diamonds. I also, on a quite a boring, serious note, I get really annoyed, as I said before in the introduction, at women's magazines. I've never before got so annoyed at something that I invented a thing. This is how fucking annoyed I am at how women are portrayed and how women are appealed to in these magazines, to say you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right, you should be doing this. If you want to be happy, this is how you do it. And it's all such utter rubbish that boils my piss. So if I really ever wanted to get furious, I just buy a couple of women's magazines. Mm-hmm. Every time, I shouldn't say this, but every time I get my hair cut and coloured, it's not natural colour, look at the roots, and I will take a photograph of myself in the mirror, because they give us, obviously, would you like Vogue and all of these things, you know, it's just basically a catalogue, isn't it? It's just adverts. And they put them down in front of me and I ignore them. And I do genuinely go on my phone and read Standard Issue, but I always send a picture of myself flicking the V's at the magazine, and I send it to Mickey every single time I get my hair cream coloured.
I think, fuck you, flip book.
We are doing something better. So yeah, I think it's not a funny answer, but it's the thing that makes me the most furious.
I hate on the covers of those magazines when they always have things like 493 ways to wear a belt. And it's like, would it have killed you to think of 7 more?
It would have if the belt was to hang yourself. Yeah. Yes.
Or just maybe 91 of those weren't that good.
Yeah. Maybe 492 of them weren't that good. Just need one way to wear a belt, that's round your waist.
What are you enjoying most about getting older? I'm going to start with Kiri.
How old are you, first of all?
I'm 29. All right.
Is it past your bedtime?
Does your mum know you're here?
Yes, and she's got my Spice Girls leggings in the car. I still feel very... I have a weird conversation. My friends who are the same age, they're like, oh, getting so old. I'm like, well, really not. Not at all. So what do I like about most about getting older? I still feel like I'm 18, and my mum said that doesn't change. She said she still expects to see like an 18-year-old version of her looking back in the mirror.
You know, there's a way you can do that. You can just put an old picture of yourself over the mirror.
Well, she was like, she's got the worst eyesight as well. She's like, and now I see an old woman staring back. I was like, you sure you aren't just looking at a £10 note or something? It's like,
she's tiny and wearing a crown. I don't remember putting my crown on today.
What do I like about getting older? Again, this feels quite ethereal, but it's just sort of like, you know what, doing stand-up I find get easier getting as I get older, because, it'll be a cumulative thing of me hopefully getting better at stand-up, but also because I guess I'm fairly high status on stage, and that is not what Northern Comedy Clubs want from a 23-year-old woman. So me being 29 now, it's a little bit easier to say, I think, to assert what I think about the world than it was as me being like, guys, I'm just out of uni and I've got it all figured out. They're like, do fuck off. Which is exactly what I would think if I saw someone doing it now. So I think stand-up is getting easier for me. And yeah, just I guess it's feeling like that's the whole thing about like occupying my space in the world and feeling like, yeah, I deserve to be places that I am, as you know, if I've worked to get there. Just not feeling like I have to apologise for being places.
Yeah,
which is something I would have done a few years ago. So please stop hating me for being 29. I can feel the tension where you're like, oh, fuck off.
I think she's overtired.
She never sleep in the car.
Katie, what about you?
I'm 37. All right, I'll open with that tomorrow. I like getting older. I've always felt older than I am. It goes a bit back to what we were saying earlier about people when they have their peak ages. I've always felt for a long, long time that my peak age will be 45. I think I'm going to be a badass motherfucker when I'm 45. And so I feel like I'm sort of on my way there. So
well, why 45?
I don't know. I've just always had this sense that around mid-40s is when I'm going to really come into my own. I don't know why. And then it'll be a slow decline from there. But yeah, I like getting older. I really like getting older. I feel more myself as I get older, definitely. And I've always looked forward to getting older. I've never been one of those people that worries about getting older. I quite like it. I feel, because I was weird. When I was 12, I acted like a 45-year-old. So the closer I get to 45, the more kind of normal I seem.
But we're quite often told that we're not allowed to get older, particularly women. It's very much frowned upon. So it's nice when you're saying that you're enjoying getting that way. Have you ever felt pressure to kind of try and cheat time and cheat the aging process?
No, I don't think so. I think if you look a certain way as a woman, and that certain way is the way that the Western world currently defines as a kind of commercial beauty, I think I genuinely sympathise with those women, especially women who have built careers around that, because I think it must be very frightening to suddenly realise that you're going to be devalued and perhaps you haven't built up other parts of yourself or your life or your career to compensate when that goes. And I always feel quite worried for those women. Whereas, you know, I obviously we've established that I'm a creature unlike any other. But you know, my modelling career didn't take off in quite the way I'd ever planned. So I sort of feel quite grateful that was never part of my trajectory. So it just sort of gets better as you get older, really. It doesn't, that part of you doesn't feel like, the decay of that part of you doesn't feel so catastrophic.
Yeah. Sarah, because you wrote for us about how awesome turning 40 was.
I love turning 40. I'm 41 now, and that's how time goes. And I like
year being, by year.
I like being older. I think I improve with age, like a good cheese. I don't know anything about cheese. I only like melted cheese. So when I melt, I'll be really happy. Hello, I'm getting there now. To be fair, I think I prefer to be older because I think it's similar to what Katie said, that I feel like I'm more myself than I've ever been. And I think that's only going to sort of improve and progress, I suppose. I think I am very comfortable in my own skin. And I think, I'm sort of, my roots are in right now. And, 10 years ago, I'd have been sort of mortified, or I'd have done a zigzag parting or something. That's what you do.
Or a quiff.
Or a quiff, that's a good way of hiding it. But now I just thought, it's sort of, I feel a bit like, take me as I am, and if you don't like how I am, then I'm not interested in talking to you. That looked like I was aiming it at that lady. She's perfectly lovely. I like your trousers very much. But I think I sort of don't give a shit. So I have chip nails, I have roots in. It feels like the main thing I like about getting older is just letting myself go. And you know what? I think that might be true. I think as long as I'm happy, all you can judge on is how if you're happy. You can't make everybody else happy, and you can't sort of allow everybody else to impose their sort of belief systems, a bit heavy-handed, but how they think you should be. So I think that's largely it, is that I love getting older. I think I'm more me than I've ever been, and I like me. So I guess that's it. Yay. Mickey?
Similar, really, in that it's nice to feel capable. I feel like I'm much more capable, and if there's something I want to do, I just go, fuck it, I'm going to give it a bash. And if it works out, smashing. And if it doesn't, next. And it's having that confidence that it's really hard won and taken ages.
That failure's not a bad thing. That failure's learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. That okay. Went heavy, didn't it? Sorry, everybody. Let's all think about dogs in wheelchairs again.
Or a fanny badger.
Fanny badger. Fanny badger.
That's a gift. You're all welcome to that. I'm going to end with one more question, because that's all we've got time for. Do you have a party trick, a special talent or party trick? I'm going to start with Kiri, because she looks embarrassed. I'm curious.
I've got a pint glass, but I can hold things aloft with my breasts. I'm not proud.
You know that thing about how the rubbish about how if you hold things under your boobs, that's supposed to be a bad thing because they're supposed to be purred. I always, when I read that, I remember thinking, I can hold loads of things under my boobs, especially if they're sticky like they are now. But I didn't realise that was a bad thing. So I've always thought of it as a good trait, and I can hold a lot of things under.
What hole have you got under there now?
A hole punch. That's stay great. That.
No, I just, because it used to be a pencil, didn't it? Yeah, so I'm just imagining like if you could hold the contents of a pencil.
Is that what you've
protractor?
Yeah, you wouldn't need to carry one around.
That is true, and I do have a pencil case. I'm now going to get rid of the pencil case and just be able to...
Is that why you really love paper, Chase?
I love, yeah, because I can get, yeah, moleskin notebooks, anything under there. Even the baskets in the shop, I can get that under there.
My name's Sarah, people call me Rymans.
Would you like a sticky pencil? sounds like a game they play at public school.
Katie, do you have a party trick?
I don't. I really don't. And I was trying to think of one because I know it was one of the questions you were going to ask, and I was trying to think of one on the way here, and I can't come up with anything. I don't really have a party trick, except that I suddenly had this really mean thought that I think it's maybe making people think I like them when I don't.
An amazing party trick. Is that just for parties, or is that for everywhere?
No. I was once told, because it's weird. Sometimes if you do performing, people assume you're very cocky and out there and extrovert all the time. And if like me, you're actually quite an introverted personality. I know that sounds strange, but I am. You can find parties quite stressful. So someone once gave me a tip where they said if you are worried about going to a party or you don't really feel like going, just ask people questions all the time. Just relentlessly ask them the questions, and you'll never be in a position where kind of the conversation dries up, and they'll think you're really nice. And they'll have really good memories of talking to you, and they'll think you're great. They won't know anything about you, but they'll think you were a really nice person. And I actually started doing that when times where I felt nervous at parties or I didn't really want to be there. And I found it really worked. And actually, ironically, I ended up having nicer times.
Oh.
Yeah.
And when you say questions, you mean questions about them or just like sort of trivia?
Trivia questions, yeah.
General knowledge.
I now go with a packet of Trivial Pursuit questions in my back pocket. And I just whip them out and I'm like, pink, green, brown, yellow or blue. And off we go. That's it for an hour and a half. Questions about them. And actually, it can lead to quite a very interesting and unusual and unexpected conversation that sort of takes the glare off you a bit.
It's a great tip.
Yeah.
But more importantly, how do you get people to think? Is that how you get people to like? To think that you like them,
yeah.
Just by asking them questions, yeah. And listening.
And not like kind of being sort of looking angry or upset at the answers.
Do you know?
Just acting like they're really interesting and nice and funny and then finding a polite reason to go away. I just sort of found it, I'm quite a fan of good manners. I think that's why I like Americans, and I think it's good manners at a party. Not Donald Trump. I don't mean like all the Americans, but I just mean I like that about that, the kind of easy grace people seem to have socially. I find that very attractive, and I think it kind of positive leads to positive, and it can be quite nice. So I think if you ask people lots of questions at a party and you're sort of friendly and open about the answers, you can go off and have your own private judgmental thoughts about them afterwards, and they'll think you really like them. The problem is if you see them at another party and they'll come over and go, well, hi! God, we should really get together for a coffee. It's like, no.
No, that's when you say no can do.
Yeah. This is
because I don't want to.
It sounds awful.
This is really resonating with me. The last two parties, I'm like, oh, that guy who asked me loads of questions and then made an excuse about why he had to leave. Like everything you've said, I was like, I've been played by an introvert.
Thank you.
You can have a sleep in the car.
Sarah, what's your party trick?
Oh, mine is quite well documented, I think. I can do a horn noise, that's it. And I have to do the hand. That. That's it. Don't clap, you don't need to clap.
bigger on the left-hand side. That's literally all I have. And the reason I have that is a friend of mine bought me an old-fashioned bighorn from like a joke shop, and it just that made that noise. And every time anybody around me sort of said something funny and I didn't have anything funny to say back, or I was tired or couldn't be asked, I just do the horn noise at them, and then that would be my version of a joke. And then I thought, well, I can't carry it around, can I? I mean, I could probably get it under a boob, to be fair, now that Katie suggested that. So I just learned how to do the sound so that I had it wherever I was. Like that. One of my favourite things is when people tell me that they can do it too, and they go, I can do that, and I go, great, and they go, hoo hoo, and you're like, that is, I don't know if you've got ears, but that's not the same. It's my favourite thing to do, and if I could honestly do an hour of that on my in my show, that's all I do. The audience would have a brilliant time for about 2-3 minutes, and then they'd be like, do you think this is all she's going to do? And then they'd leave, but they'd ask me loads of questions first. Mickey, have you got it? Have you got it?
I didn't think I had one, but then I remembered that I know all of the lyrics to House of Pain's Jump Around.
Wow.
Can you do a bit of it for us?
Pack it up, pack it in, let me begin. I came to win, battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever back up, punk, you better pack up, try and play around, you're the whole cool act up. Get up, stand up, come and throw your hands up. If you get a feeling, don't touch the ceiling. Mugs let the phone flow, someone's talking joke, you will bust them in the eye, and then I'll kick the punk so not on.
And see if anybody has anything. Kerry, when is your show? Just so we can mention it to these lovely people.
My show is 6 o'clock at Pleasance This.
Katie?
My show is at 4:45 Pleasance Upstairs. It's called I Was a Teenage Christian.
And we are doing we're doing a gig, but it's sold out tomorrow night. Is anybody coming to that?
Yay!
Yeah. The Mouse family.
Yay! but please, the people who never heard of Standard Issue, do you think you'll have a look?
Yeah.
Yay! Oh, well, bless you for that. It's online, it's free, please have a look. It's for you, and it's, a happy alternative to the bullshit that's out there. Thank you so much for coming. You've been such an amazing audience. Please thank our panellists, Mickey Noonan, Perry Bridgerton, and Katie Brand. Thank you very much, everybody!
Enjoyed Standard Issue magazine in conversation at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival 2016. Just a quick reminder to please rate, review and subscribe to all our podcasts on iTunes, including previous In Conversations and fortnightly Geek Girl Celebration Strong Female Leads. Standard Issue is a smart and witty online magazine for all women and is available at standardissuemagazine.com. You can keep up with all the articles, news and reviews by following @StandardIssueUK on Twitter. This has been a production of Standard Issue Magazine. Your announcer was Deborah Jane Appleby, and our In Conversation theme music was composed and recorded by Michelle Imbierski. All rights are reserved.